It is the final
ever
Say Anything of 2018. Joe Williams back alongside Andy Martino. You're back from Las Vegas.
Oh, that's right. I was there last week.
Yeah. Lots of shows without you with John Harper in your chair. Before we get to more Mets talk, I just want to make a quick announcement. It is labeled on my show rundown as a red alert.
You want a drum roll?
We have less than 30 tickets left.
That's not true.
It is true.
Can't be true.
No, it's actually true. Less than 30 tickets left for the Queens Baseball Convention. January 19th, Catch in Astoria, Doug Williams, Andy Martino, Todd Zeal, Sal Acata. We will do the show.
This show.
Keith Hernandez, Edgardo Alfonso, Ed Cranepool. Panels, autograph sessions, much, much more. For tickets, visit www.queensbaseballconvention.com.
You are better at anchoring than you would be at movie trailers. That was just okay.
I wasn't even trying.
In a world. You don't have that presence.
Where there's 30 tickets.
There it is. So there were 30, according to BNNY last night, there were 30 tickets left. According to this advertisement today, there were 30 tickets left. Does that mean that the BNNY promo sold zero tickets?
I don't know that for sure.
Were there more than 30 tickets available to begin with?
Here's what I will say. I believe that Michael Flynn, our producer, yesterday was trying to figure out how many tickets were left, and he had 35.
Okay.
By the time we got to the show, there were 30 left.
Oh, so they're selling like hotcakes.
Hotcakes.
Okay.
So I would guess that between 6 o'clock show last night and the podcast today being Wednesday, some tickets have sold, but maybe we're just going with the 30 for now. But just buy them, okay? We'll be there. If you listen to the podcast, it'll be fun. If you have any free time on January 19th, it's the most depressing time of the year in New York and in Queens. But at Catch Astoria on January 19th, 2019...
I'm just getting a bulletin. We have 2 tickets left.
Oh.
Hurry.
But this podcast isn't even live. There's just some sort of ridiculous flying off the shelves nature for these tickets.
But we are looking forward to it. It's cool that Todd agreed to come.
Yeah.
Todd's all over the place, circling the globe. He's going to be there. Keith is going to be there. A real low-key year for Keith. No publicity at all that he's capping off. So I'm surprised that he's making an appearance. And Fonzie and Cranepool.
Very exciting. We are coming off yesterday morning. Andy and I were here in this very studio doing the Wilson Ramos press conference. We were not expecting it to be maybe as juicy,
as newsworthy as it became.
And, Wilson Ramos said all the right things. He didn't really make any headlines. He was, I actually found how nervous he was to be endearing.
I agree.
And he said, this is my first press conference. And my first thought was, you know what? Wilson Ramos has been a good player for a long time. It's good that he has a press conference.
Like, my first thought was, Wilson, check the AP style book. It's a news conference, not a press conference.
Okay.
And that's what I'm going to tell him at spring training.
I'm sure he will.
No, look, I actually agree with you. I wanted that to come up in our actual coverage of this, and then we had other things to talk about. But I actually also thought it was endearing that he admitted, he kind of coughed, said, sorry, I'm nervous, in his interview with Steve. And that just—it's a little thing, but it humanizes them. These news conferences.
AP style book, man.
These news conferences are so rote and sort of packaged sometimes that it was cool to have him have that moment.
Then 2 things that stood out to me from Brody were that these kind of lofty storyline things are still coming out. Like he said, I believe, like we do what we say and we say what we do. So that's still happening. And then also he told Steve Gelbs, and I'm sure everybody listening knows it already. He told Steve that, they internally could make the argument, the Mets, that
I don't think he said could. I mean, I could be wrong, but didn't he say like internally we think we're the best team in the division or the team to beat or something?
I don't know. I don't want to paraphrase, but it's somewhere in between those two, I think, where he believes or the Mets believe that they're the favorite in the division.
Either way, he went Jimmy Rollins on the boast.
Lots been made of that. And Andy and I have talked a lot about it. We won't spend a ton of time on it because we want to get into what's next, which I think is more interesting at this point. But for Brody to say that means that he believes to this point they have made their team a lot better.
The quote was, internally, we would argue that we're the favorites in the division right now. So that's
there you go.
Strongly worded.
So I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I'm just curious. If Brody deep down thinks that they are signing two low-level starting pitchers for depth and a decent outfielder, and he feels really good that those two things are going to happen, would he factor that having already been done in to a potential favorite in the National League East, or is he just looking at the moves he's made to this point?
I don't know the answer to that. It's a good question. I would lean toward thinking he means the moves he's made, because a talking point that has surfaced now is that they've signed four All-Stars. Two of the guys were All-Stars last year, I believe, Diaz and Ramos. And
Ramos, I don't think, was an All-Star last
year. No, he was. He was. He was on the DL, but he was. I remember seeing him introduced as the Buffalo in Washington, because they love him there.
But I thought his season started in June.
No, he was at the... I have a actual personal memory of him being introduced to the All-Star game, and they go, the Buffalo, Wilson Ramos, and everyone went, yay. I swear to God. Anyway.
You were wrong.
No.
You were right.
I was
you
there.
Were right.
You okay,
were right.
I was right. So anyway, they've got two All-Stars from last year, four All-Stars total. I think we would all argue, including Brody, that they need to do more. But I think they feel that they've fulfilled a lot of what they said they would do.
By the way, I must have been mixing up the year. So I think his 2017 started in June.
Because he had ACL surgery.
He had ACL surgery.
Last year was a hamstring.
Last year was a hamstring issue when he got traded over to the Phillies, but his season started normally. And he had a terrific year. The good news about Ramos is the batting average has been really good. Like his last 3 years or so when he's been healthy, he's been rock solid. So I know the All-Star thing with these four guys, and at the same time, and we talked about this yesterday, I know that Brody on the phone with Robinson Cano did not say, hey, Robbie.
At dinner with Robinson Cano.
At dinner or whatever, when he was waving his no-trade clause, Robbie, you want to come here? And Robbie's like, why? And he's like, I know we've been bad the last 2 years, but I am going to re-sign Jerry's Familia, and I'm going to sign Wilson Ramos to be the catcher.
Yeah.
Robbie's like, sign me up. And you know what? At the press conference, I'm going to mention this conversation and say how many exciting things you have planned. It bums me out that the creative thinking, the outside-the-box thinking, whatever you want to say about the potential deals we've heard about, it bums me out that that might be over.
I think that's going to be characteristic of his entire tenure as Mets GM. I think we do have a clearer picture of how their offseason is going to proceed. To your point, a lot of those, we were talking about this, every stone left unturned, they've turned over a lot of the stones and considered them. The big one being trading many, many players off your roster and various permutations for JT Realmuto, obviously not happening. But Brody's not going to stop operating in the way that he operates. So whether it's in-season stuff, whether it's letting Peter Alonso make the team if he earns it on opening day, insanely in my opinion, but anyway, you know, he's going to continue right to push the envelope with the way he does things. But I know what you're saying, that it's not... But in terms of convincing Cano to come, all you had to do is be like, Robinson, we don't play in Seattle.
Yeah, no.
I realize that,
but I'm just talking about the quote that Robbie had.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we're going to make more moves. And there's still that sense of excitement around the team. I know David Wright spent all week at the winter meetings with, obviously, Brody in the front office and left very impressed, jazzed up, like, oh, this guy's going to do a good job. He works hard. He's making moves. So there's still that genuine feeling from people in the room. I just like that little nugget about David Wright.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's good.
So I hear what you're saying about this particular offseason, but this is who he's going
to
be.
And I like that there seems to be, and you mentioned this yesterday too, there seems to be an emphasis on character. And I believe it was you that connected the dots between Brody saying that and the fact that, you know, David Wright is at the winter meetings. They
yes.
want the largest group of smart people they can to weigh in on everything.
Smart and good people.
Good people.
Here's three people that legitimately, I don't think anyone's ever said a bad word about their character and their personalities are in baseball. In all of baseball, never a bad word. David Wright, Omar Minaya, and Allard Baird. So Brody is definitely following through on surrounding himself with people who have the reputation of being good people.
Right. So in terms of what's next, let's try and get down to the bottom of that, because yesterday on Baseball Night in New York, you said Adam Jones sounds like the Mets aren't all that involved in his sweepstakes right now. And AJ Pollock sounds too expensive. We'll see what happens to that market, as you said on Twitter. But right before we started recording the podcast, we were going through the Mets' need for pitching depth. And because there's this serious drop-off, every Met fan knows about it, right after you get DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler, you don't know what Steven Matz is. Vargas is still in the rotation.
And you're counting Syndergaard and Wheeler in, right?
And
they could be part of the drop-off, depending on their health.
Exactly. So, and we were looking at the list of free agent starting pitchers that are left. And I have no problem with the Mets passing on Lance Lynn, giving him millions of dollars, or someone like Matt Harvey, or anybody like that that's signed. The list I was thinking of, guys like Marco Estrada, Drew Pomeranz, Gio Gonzalez, Michael Fiers, Doug Fister, Irvin Santana. Like, give me two of those guys. And I know that if they require a couple million dollars or $5 million, you're not going to want that guy to be in AAA or be in your bullpen. But they're going to need them. I mean, how many times do we have to learn that you need 15 or so starting pitchers to last an entire season?
Here's a statement of objective fact about one of those names that you just read. Doug Fister was once traded for Charlie Furbush. Anyway, regarding the 2019 Mets, I do think they're going to end up with one of those pitchers on that list. I haven't dug deep enough to figure out which they may be prioritizing over others, but I know at the winter meetings, their people were fanning out, meeting with agents, talking to people representing starting pitchers, and that's a market that generally takes shape in January, February, the second, third, fourth tier starting pitchers. But they'll bring in some of those guys. Any of those guys that you named, I'd go, yeah, okay, maybe. Did you say Wade Miley?
I don't know if I mentioned Wade
Miley. Okay, Miley's available. I think that's a little high-end for what they're looking to do at this point. But most of those other guys that you said, I could see. And they're not done signing players, and I definitely could see starting depth there. You know, they should have been on J-Hap, by the way, because I really think that the look of DeGrom, Syndergaard, Hap would have been a really nice in rotation where you bring in that lefty who doesn't throw as hard, who has better pitchability than Syndergaard.
By the way, that's what they thought they were getting last year in Vargas.
Well, that's true, and it didn't work out well.
They signed the wrong guy.
And Hap will fall off the cliff one of these years, although he's not showing signs of decline, but just... There were rumblings early that they were going to play for J-Hap, and then they didn't at all. And to me, that would have been, oh my God, you slide him into, say, the third spot of that rotation would have looked good. But anyway.
Well, so the idea of Rajay Davis, and I think it was basically what you're saying is maybe more of those type players. And to me, Rajay Davis is a good signing.
Yeah. Sure.
It just is a good signing when you're also signing AJ Pollock to be sure things, and then you have depth all around them. When you look at the outfield, Andy, like, is Brody satisfied? Is he watching the market for Pollock and he thinks he just costs too much right now and he would still like the player? What is he thinking right
now? He likes the player, but the Rajay Davis signing was significant in that they now feel that they have step back a second. The Davis and Ramos signings combined affect the Pollock situation because Pollock was supposed to be a right-handed bat. Then they got Wilson Ramos. That's a right-handed bat. Rajay Davis is a center fielder or can play center field. 47 or 48 games in center field last year. One of those two. I can't remember offhand. Nimmo can play some center. Conforto in a pinch can play some center. So, and obviously Juan Lagares is there. So they do feel now that between bat and center, they're a little more covered in those two areas than they were when they first started talking to AJ Pollock. No one has said, rule out AJ Pollock, but definitely de-emphasize the Mets' pursuit of AJ Pollock at this time.
What about Marwin Gonzalez?
That hasn't been on the radar for whatever reason. Just not a name that's been around. I'm not saying they're not going to sign that guy. I know that that's a potential bidding war situation because that's a big name around the league that's considered a very useful player, will draw wide interest, and nothing's connected to Mets to him yet that I've sniffed out. That's not to say that clearly it could still be going on, but I'm just saying I haven't heard anything.
I keep waiting for a firm grasp on the idea of what everybody's going to cost. Like Michael Brantley, did that help us figure out what Marwin Gonzalez, 2 and 32?
And that, so McCutcheon might just be the outlier as an overpay.
Like exactly what the Phillies did last year with Carlos Santana.
Right.
And ended up trading him. You know,
good point. I didn't think of that.
3 years, I think, $60 million?
Yeah, I think it was about that.
So, yeah, if the Phillies' stupid money just isn't on the players that I think Phillies fans want. Yeah, I mean, going back to what Brody said, I just still think they're a couple moves away from being even considered at the top of the National League East. I just look at the team, and I know I can see issues popping up left and right, you know?
Well, yes. It always gets a little – this isn't a defense of the Mets, but it always gets a little tricky to me to look at a team's issues in a vacuum because everyone else has issues.
Yeah.
But I don't see how they're the favorite in the National League East. But I will tell you this. Brody is not going to back down off that rhetoric. That was not a slip. I can tell you that this is something I now know meant to do and will keep doing if given the opportunity. So make of that what you will, whether it works out or whether he turns out to look like Rex Ryan in retrospect, this is the path he's traveling with his words.
I'll be honest, I don't mind it. I know that I'm saying I disagree with it, but I don't mind it as a practice because whatever's going to motivate him, whatever's going to motivate someone in the Mets organization to make them better. And if Brody wants to make these proclamations and talk about the Mets in a serious light in terms of contending in the National League East, then good. They should contend in the National League.
He's trying to change the culture. It's a high-risk move that puts a lot of pressure on him.
Right.
More than anyone else. And he knows that. He's smart. He knows he's putting pressure on himself. But you're right. It's presenting them as contenders, which, you know, it's sort of like several years ago now, John Harper wrote a column where he reported that Fred Wilpon, not Sandy Alderson, but Fred Wilpon challenged the Mets. Maybe it was Sandy. Now I have to go back and look. But Sandy or Fred challenged the Mets brass in a spring training meeting to win 90 games. And it was like in the era where they're winning 70-something every year. So it really jolted people. And I know that coaches started to feel pressure like, oh, crap, we got to win 90 games? We can't just, like, you know, collect their paychecks and win 74? And look, that was toward the beginning of their ascent toward the World Series. It may have been a year or two before. I have to go back and look now. But Brody's trying to do a similar thing, like, let's go, people. I'm putting pressure on us. And obviously including, he'll be evaluated on these statements, and he
100%.
Knows it.
Let's do this segment that Jeff Goldman thought of. What we want for Christmas. Now, this is a two-part segment.
Okay.
The first one is what we want the Mets to get for Christmas. The second part of it is what Doug and Andy actually
are asking. We're doing this instead of Saturday night as sort of a holiday-themed personal
after this,
dive?
That's fine with me. Instead of Saturday night, after this, we're going to get you to give us a Las Vegas story from the winter meeting.
Okay.
I will go first in terms of my Mets item.
Okay.
What I think the Mets should do.
Let's hear it.
AJ Pollock.
Yeah, that's what the Mets should want for Christmas?
Yes. I think the Mets should want AJ Pollock for Christmas because I think, weirdly, in some ways, he is underrated. Well, it sounds like he's overpriced. Like, and maybe that price will go down if he continues to be a free agent. Who knows what's going to happen with Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. But when he is healthy, he's a stud. And I think there, as of right now, there's no reason to believe that he's not healthy. And again, I can totally understand with a player with health issues like that in the past, you want to be careful and don't want to give him $60 million or more. But that's the guy I think, in my mind, if the Mets sign A.J. Pollock, I'd be like, boom, A-plus offseason.
Okay.
You can talk about yourselves as being at the top of that division.
As long as we're talking about Christmas gifts, the only thing I can think to say is Bryce Harper.
Why the hell not? Well, aim high. It's like ask for a car.
Yeah.
What?
You know what happened?
When you ask for a car, it's like, am I worse off? I didn't get the car, but like.
Listen to this story. When my sister was about, my poor parents that I'm telling this, but my sister, when she was about 16, just the right age, under the Christmas tree, there was a string, and the string went to the garage. And the whole time she was following the string to the garage, she was like obviously thinking the obvious thought. And when she opened the door to the garage, the string led to a canoe.
Oh my gosh.
And everyone felt
so bad.
But you just reminded me of that. Is A.J. Pollock a canoe in this scenario,
or is he better
than that?
I think Met fans have...
Is he a speedboat?
No, he's a great little piece.
Bryce is like a what? Like a Tesla?
No, the situation you're describing is Brody coming to the podium to announce something. No one knows what it is. And Brody's like, we have signed the best free agent outfielder of this offseason. And Mets fans are freaking out. And then he's like,
Adam
A.J. Pollock.
A.J. Pollock, yeah.
That would be the canoe instead of the car.
Okay.
If the Mets just sign A.J. Pollock, everyone would be like, oh, that's a great gift.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's no teasing going on. At least now, it doesn't sound like the Mets are into Bryce Harper.
Well, they're not. Obviously, they weren't.
But I like you choosing that as your gift.
Sign Bryce Harper, guys.
I love
it. Let's go. I want to watch him play for the next 8 to 10 years. Every day here in New York with that hair flow thing he's got going on all the billboards. You don't like that? You made
no,
a face.
I do. I like it.
What would you make a face for when I said that?
I think his hair is going to change throughout the years, like Tom Brady. So I don't think he'll always have the
okay,
long.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, 1 year he'll have a buzz cut. 1 year he'll have the long flow. 1 year he'll have a beard.
By the end of that contract, how much hair is he going to have?
That's a great question.
It's a long
ask.
Well,
he's only going to be like 33.
Well, sometimes it happens to guys. Anyway, I think they should sign Bryce Harper for Christmas. On Christmas. No, not on
no,
Christmas.
No. Well, what are you talking about?
How about while we're on the air tonight, just do that.
How about at 6:28, they sign Bryce Harper.
We'll just go, here's something. The Mets are.
We're going to do one of our Baseball Night New York segments. Oh, no. 5:58 would be better. Because
yeah, we could do the whole show on
The only thing about that would be nice about 6:28 is we could do our regular show, and then I think, I can't remember if there's programming after us tonight, but I think we could just blow it out, and they'd let us be on the air for a while just talking about it.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I don't think that's all happening, though.
Although, no, it's not. So what about a Vegas story?
Because well,
just from an outsider's perspective, I was talking to you a little bit, and obviously on the podcast too, but Mets fans' perspectives, your Vegas consisted of basically finding the scoop that the Mets and Yankees were talking. Then there's three-team trade. Is Noah Syndergaard going to get traded?
Mm-hmm.
Then Jairus Familia gets signed in the middle of the night. You are slowly becoming more and more exhausted as this week goes on.
Exhausted,
and
that's
then
it.
You are on all of our phones and tablets and mm-hmm. computers with Steve Gelbs in the early hours of the morning. Is there a story that the people
you
out there
what?
don't know about that they'd like to hear?
I have two stories that would be really popular if told, which would definitely violate my terms of employment.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with the backstory for
how. So I'm going to tell them both.
No, I'm not going to tell either of those. But truly, the Vegas trip, it sounds glamorous. I had a good time, but it was a work good time. It is a heavy, heavy work day. From the time that you hear that Jay Happ might be signing at 7:30 a.m. to the time that you're on the air at 1 a.m., all local time, talking about the Familia signing, we're not exactly at the blackjack table for the most part. So that's right. Just, it's fine, but the might as well be in Indianapolis because it's a work trip. There were a couple fun times that we were able to have, but I would say the most interesting was the night that we found out the Yankees and Mets were talking. So I'll do a brief backstory behind that. Probably more interesting to you than any escapade I may or may not have had. Anyway, let me see. So on Sunday, when the meetings hadn't even started yet, I'm at the bar at the Delano Hotel where the executives are staying. The media was staying at the Mandalay, which is next door. Usually we all stay in the same hotel, but in this one they actually separated themselves. So I go over there to have a drink, see what's what. It was a good scene. Like at various times of the night, I got to talk to Alex Cora, who I hadn't seen at length since I covered him as a Met, and Ronnie Darling was there, and who else? Pedro Martinez. It's like a good baseball crowd. And at one point, I see somebody, I have to leave it as someone who works for either the Yankees or the Mets, who starts talking about how, drops a mention that the Yankees and the Mets are talking about something. So immediately, I must have like stiffened up because the guy like backed off. He or she, the guy or girl, or woman or man, backed off and was like, oh, wouldn't tell me anymore. So I go, okay, we move on with the night. I obviously banked that. Well, this could be, if I figure out what this could be the scoop of the meetings, obviously. The Mets and the Yankees don't talk. The Mets and the Yankees couldn't even agree on it. Let me tell you, Sandy Alderson and Brian Cashman are still mad at each other over the Neil Walker trade that almost happened.
Yeah.
They are legitimately like bad blood over the little piddly thing. So if they're talking about something at the winter meetings, that's a story. But I didn't know what it was. The next day, my buddy and I, Jim Duquette, in the show prep that we do for our Hot Stove show, we're trying to figure it out. Jim is obviously as connected as almost anyone in this industry. We're trying to figure it out. We both got a few tips that we're checking out through the day. We're communicating. He's doing his radio thing. I'm doing my SNY thing. And
by the way, Jim, for the record, is a cauldron of information. Because he's got incredible relationships in Major League Baseball and around Major League Baseball. And he's just learning. He's not in the business of outing sources or anything like that.
He's an analyst, and he's not a newsbreaker.
Right, that's the thing.
Yeah, so but he knows things, and in this case, we were both, and nothing more needs to be said about it other than every time we do a show together, we collaborate on putting that show together, obviously. So the MLB Network set was just a few, maybe 10 feet or so. Excuse me, the MLB Radio set was 10 feet or so from the SNY set. So as I'm making some notes to get ready for what I think is going to be a sleepy hot stove show on Monday night, Jim comes racing over, like breathless, which is not Jim's typical MO. He's like, I think I figured it out. And he's got this Yankees, Mets, Marlins scenario, but he doesn't know if it's true. We've still got to figure it out and check it out. So what happens after that is a frantic hour or so of us calling every source you can possibly think of to see if this checks out. And we're not putting anything out there. You don't do that until you're sure. But we're pretty sure that there's something there. We're checking it out. The one wrinkle in this is we have Brody on the set for an interview, which doesn't usually, those interviews are interesting, but they don't usually dive into on the record specifics about ongoing trade talks. So like, how are we going to handle, like, and you know, obviously I'm trying to talk to everyone involved, Brody included, and we're having trouble getting anyone to confirm this. And a few sources who I trust said, no, that's not, there's nothing to that. Or whoa, buddy, haven't heard that, you know, that kind of thing. And those people later apologized a few hours later. Dude, I didn't know that was going on. That was above our pay grade. Sorry. So that's how kind of like secretive it was. It was a very small group of people that turned out to know about it. Brody gets to the set as we're trying to figure it out. And he is obviously reticent to discuss exactly. I'm trying to work him, just like we're trying to work everyone else. He's reticent to discuss it. He gives his interview where I ask him the question, like, how much of the what you're working on do we know about? And he knows what I think I know at that point, but he's not confirming it. And he's like, you know about 10% of what we're doing. There's about 90% that we're able to keep secret. And he sort of pointedly says, we'd rather it be 0% that you know. So anyway, long story short, as the night goes on, we're able to confirm it through other channels that it's going on. By this point, the rest of the media has it. I believe Ken Rosenthal may have put something out while we were on the air. Then I did something right after. Everyone else is talking about it. It was one of those, like, I'm going to sleep, and the MLB Network's like, according to SNY. It was like just crazy. And we're trying to make sure we're right on everything. I'm at dinner with, like, guys who work with us who we know well, and I'm getting texts that, like, yo, the Yankees are pushing really hard to get this deal done. They want the Mets pitching so bad, and it's becoming a real thing. They really wanted Syndergaard. They were really working on it. And, of course, it didn't happen, but holy hell, was it an interesting 3 or 4 hours.
Of course, Brody just happened to be on the show.
How did I tell that? Was that compelling?
Well, no. How about this? Brody's on the set. Andy is also on the set with this scoop. So Andy has to navigate.
They can't really talk about it.
Right. Andy has to navigate. You're not going to have a conversation with Brody on the air like a conversation you have with Brody trying to get some information off the air.
And he's trying to block. It can be a more combative conversation.
It would
off
be,
the air.
Right. And on television, you'd be bombarding him because mm-hmm. it's not his job necessarily to confirm things.
They're actually
that
not
are,
allowed to comment.
Right.
It's tampering.
It's tampering and it's at its infancy stage. So those things aren't normally discussed. I just find it fascinating.
So we
meanwhile, yeah, while you're on the air, Ken Rosenthal gets the same scoop that you know while you're on the set.
Yeah.
Man, it's a lot going on.
It was a lot. And at the
meanwhile,
end of the day...
I was asleep.
Well, you know, doing your job all week, too. That just happened to be hours out there. But it was... I mean, none of this is like national security secrets, but there's a certain adrenaline to figuring these things out. And if you cover baseball in New York, if you've, like, watched baseball in New York for the years that we've... lifetime in both of our cases... It's cool when the Yankees and the Mets are doing something. I remember when I was a little kid and all they ever did was play each other once or twice in spring training. I used to try to get home if that was on TV, like the Yankees and the Mets are playing.
Right.
And then the Subway Series is a big deal. And now, so if they're talking about a high profile trade, it's just cool. That's what we do this for.
Yep. Well, anyway, thank you for sharing that. Really interesting. And again, we don't know much. We said this yesterday. Let's try not to talk about who the favorites should be in any division until at least the two highest-priced free agents in years, maybe ever, sign with teams, because then we'll have a better idea. Let's say the Phillies sign both of them. I might be willing to put them as the
I don't think that's happening.
Probably not happening. But anyway.
But yes, I agree.
It's time to say goodbye. And just to our loyal listeners, we appreciate it as always. Hope everybody has had an awesome holiday season, has a very happy new year. Again, if you aren't already subscribed to our show, you just search for Shay Anything in the iPhone podcast app or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Click on that logo, hit subscribe, give us a rate and review as our actual holiday gift instead of Bryce Harper or AJ Pollock, and we'd really appreciate it. Anything to say to our listeners, Andy?
Bye.
Keeping it simple.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy everything. I've had fun doing this podcast this year, but I'm not sentimental because we'll be back right after New Year's.
Yes, we will.
How's that?
This is not a big goodbye. Just hope everybody has
But thank fun. You for listening in our first year. It's been a fun experience for us
it has
and all the interaction.
All right. Bye, everybody.